Hey y'all, welcome to another episode of Jesse's Fireside Chats. It's been a while since I've done one of these, but today we're going to be doing another grab bag because it's my birthday and it's been a while since we've recorded anything, so I'm catching y'all back up. So, much of the segments in this are going to be me talking about some flaws in logic and thought, but I'm also going to touch on the disgusting interview that was done with a dead child. So let's get started. So first I'd like to talk about this this situation with a child who died in a school shooting 7 years ago and was supposedly interviewed by a former CNN guy. Apparently the parents of the child decided to use AI to try to bring the kid back. If you watch it, it's very, you know, it's very apparent that it's AI, because AI has a special way of talking that humans don't talk like that. Also, the amount of leftist talking points that ooze from this AI make it very apparent that it's AI, because a lot of AI does tend to lean liberal. And even if you could perfectly bring back a child, or anyone for that matter, who is dead, using AI, like, even if AI got good enough that you could bring this person back and it would sound just like the person, talk just like them, have all the same thoughts and hopes and dreams, it still wouldn't be right. Because it's the dead should be allowed to rest. It's not morally right to bring someone back from the dead. I mean, the Bible, you know, is very clear, we shouldn't speak with the dead. And that's what you're doing here. You're trying to speak with the dead. You're disturbing their rest. And that's just wrong. Even if you're not physically digging them up out of the grave, and even if you're not physically bringing them back and they're not physically talking to you, just the idea that you are trying to use AI to bring back someone from the dead is just, it's creepy, it's wrong. We shouldn't do it. Should it be illegal? I don't know. You know my thoughts on big government, but it definitely should not be something we encourage. It's wrong. And the fact that now the dad is defending it, it's even worse. I know losing a child can be rough. I've thankfully never had to deal with that before, because I don't have kids, but I can imagine that it's very rough losing a child. However, comma, this is not the answer. And even if you weren't interviewing them, like, with cameras and stuff like that, even if it was just you used an AI and you interacted with the AI at home, talked to your dead loved one, it would still be gross and wrong, because you would still be disturbing the rest of the dead. You'd still be trying to speak with the dead. And the Bible says that we should not do that. And it's just, words can't even quite describe how creepy it is. God has given everyone a time, even if the circumstances in which they leave this world are tragic, like, say, a school shooting, God has given everyone a time. He has a time that he calls everyone home, and he has already called this kid home. He did it 7 years ago, and so, does that mean that he died under good circumstances? No. Nobody wishes that on anybody. At least, you shouldn't. But the fact of the matter is, this kid has already gone home. And so, you know, we should not bring him back in any way, physically or with AI. It's just wrong. Now, the next thing I'd like to move on to is Kamala Harris has a new book out, and I haven't read it because I care too much about the structural integrity of my brain, but from what I've heard, she is saying that Congress is not doing its job when she's going out and promoting this book. And her reasoning for saying Congress is not doing its job is because Congress agrees with what the president wants to do, and so is not just voting against it all. And I've heard this complaint from others too. And I don't love everything that's going on, but I do love some of it. And some of what I do like is part of what's being critiqued. But whether I like it or not is not relevant right now, because what I am getting at here is this kid logic of, oh, well, Congress isn't doing what I want them to do, so therefore they're not doing their job. It's like when a kid wants to have a friend over, you know, a teenager maybe, and says, like, mom says no, so they go to dad, or more likely dad says no, so they go to mom, and they ask mom, can I have this friend over, or can I go out, or can I do this or that, and the mom agrees with the dad, and then the kid gets all mad. Well, you weren't supposed to agree with dad. You were supposed to. Why are you not hearing me? You're not listening to me. You're not fair. I mean, they may not say those out loud, that you were supposed to agree with me, but the way they act in response when the mom agrees with the dad is kind of the same thing that's going on here, where she's upset that Congress agrees with the president on something instead of doing what she wants them to do. And so I think it's very childish. We have a lot of childish logic in our political discourse. Sometimes on both sides. Sometimes it's the same patterns on both sides. We have a lot of people who think they're the only one on the planet, and their philosophies on things, no matter how deeply fleshed out those philosophies may be, the way that they respond to the political landscape can often be extremely immature. Whether it's calling people names, which is classic playground stuff, or whether it's getting mad because because the things that they want to happen aren't happening, which, yes, in some cases, it can be more justified than others to be upset about something, but then to say that the childish part comes in when you say that, that Congress is not doing its job because they agree with the president, and they're voting accordingly. Because, newsflash, yes, you can advocate for what you want, policy-wise, but at the end of the day, Congress's job is not to just do everything you want them to do 24/7. Their job is to vote however they believe is best on whatever policies are put in front of them. Now, we can definitely disagree on what is best, but that's, you know, that's what elections are for. And also, we shouldn't, this is also the problem of relying on politicians to do what you want all the time. Relying on the government instead of looking to other sources for some of the things that you want or need. Now, I understand case by case there may be some things where you have no choice but to rely on the government, at least right now, because of the way the system is constructed. But what I'm trying to get at here is reliance on the government is not always just physical. It can be psychological, too. That's a large part of the conditioning that people have undergone in the last, I'd say the last 100 years or so. Probably longer than that, but especially with the rise of public schools, is people have been conditioned to not only physically rely on the government, vote for more, for policies that increase the size of the government, expect the government to do things that are not the government's job, but they've also been conditioned to psychologically rely on the government. I mean, that's why you get stories of people calling 911 because they didn't get ketchup for their fries or whatever nonsense. And it's the same thing here. She's been conditioned to rely on the government to do what she wants them to do. And so because of that, she is getting all up in a knot because the government, the Congress specifically, is agreeing with the president. So the government's not doing what she wants the government to do. It's like that meme that went around in the first Trump administration during one of the government shutdowns where it was a picture of Trump holding a phone. And it said, there was a speech bubble. It said, "Yes, my government's not doing what I want it to do." And then another speech bubble says, "Did you try turning it off and turning it back on?" Now, I understand that the point of that meme was attacking him for the government shutdown, but I am reminded of it here because just the image of somebody calling and saying, "Yes, my government's not doing what I want it to do," as if that's a sign of defectiveness in the government. That's kind of scary and immature. And you see it on both sides, depending on who's in power. I'm not just coming down on her. You saw some of the same logic from some people on the other side when Biden was in power. And granted, Biden did a lot of things that were messed up and things I would not support. But just what I'm getting at here is less about the policy, less about the parties, and more the fact that people believe that the government not doing what they want it to do and what they psychologically are relying on it to do is a sign of defectiveness in the government rather than just the nature of the representatives doing their job by voting for what they believe is best. And that's even putting aside what I've said before and still believe, which is that the representatives only represent us in theory because they have other voices whispering or shouting in their ears when we're trying to also communicate our needs. And so they either don't or can't listen to us half the time, sometimes more than that, because of lobbying and other, you know, partisan drama and stuff like that. But again, this is even putting that aside. This is just saying that the bottom line here is whether the government is doing what you want it to do or not is not synonymous with whether the government is doing its job. We can talk about what is the government's job and what is not. I do that all the time because I think the government should be much smaller than it is. But that's kind of beside the point right now. So, anyway, moving on. The next thing I want to talk about is this candidate in New York City for mayor. Now, I don't live in New York. I don't plan to. I'm not even sure if I ever want to visit. But it is important to briefly talk about the most likely candidate for mayor of New York. The candidate that's most likely to win because he's won the Democratic primary and New York is a very blue city. And that candidate is named Zoran Mamdani. Now, I don't talk about people a lot, but I will say that he is essentially a socialist. I mean, he's out there saying things like he wants to establish city-owned grocery stores. He wants to tax the rich. Never mind the fact that he comes from money, but a lot of socialists come from money. It's funny how that works. Anyway, so what I'm more going to get into here is we've seen countless examples throughout history of socialism not working when it's been tried. You've seen a lot of countries that were doing at least decent for themselves, and they went socialist, and then everything fell off a cliff. Soviet Russia, North Korea, Venezuela, Cuba, China. The only reason China's doing so well right now is that they have relaxed some of their socialism, like they've allowed some private industry, and also China's in a lot of debt and heading towards a demographic problem because of their one-child policy. So that's not great. But what I'm getting at here is socialism, I've been very clear, is something that will never work, no matter how many times it's been tried. I've already covered that theme in a few other episodes, but I want to leave you with an interesting analogy here to think about. So imagine that I have a rock, and I lift it straight up in the air, and I let go of it, like right above my head. What's going to happen? Well, the rock is going to come down, and it's going to hit me square in the head. I'm going to have a wild goose egg on top of my head. Or I'm going to go to the hospital, or I won't have a head anymore, depending on how big the rock is. Like, that's the only thing that determines, the main thing that determines how bad the damage will be is the size of the rock, because of just simple physics. What comes up must go down. What goes up must come down, essentially. It's gravity. So, that's what happens with socialism. Everybody, they try the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. The only thing that determines which countries fail worse than others is how bad the socialism is, like how long and to what degree they try the socialism. And I know New York City is not a country, although it tried to be in the time of the war between the states. It tried to be a free city-state. But it's not right now. And so I know New York City is not a country, but it could still, if he wins, it could still serve as an example of what happens when socialism is implemented. Because no matter how many rocks you throw up straight in the air right above your head, they're always going to come down and they're always going to hit you in the head. That's just the way gravity works. And some people never seem to learn. There's been a quote that's often been misattributed to Einstein, and I don't know who actually said it, because when you look up who actually said this quote, like, there is no clear answer. And the quote is that insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results. And that's very clear when you look at the history of socialism. They try the same thing, and they expect different results each time. They always expect it to end up in a utopia, and it always ends up with a dictatorship where most people are starving. And everything's falling apart. A lot of times, too, these countries end up in insurmountable walls of debt because, well, when you tax the rich, you suck out all the profit motive, you get rid of all the business, all of the, everything that is paying your bills, and then the bills come due, you're up a creek without a paddle. That's what socialism does. That's how it will always go. And some people never learn. And then when it goes wrong, and this happens not just in politics, although it happens a lot there, doesn't just happen with socialism, it happens with a lot of things. You'll have two camps Well, actually three. You'll have one camp that accepts responsibility, that says, yeah, we screwed up. There don't tend to be a lot of those among socialists. And in when it comes to communism, you have a fourth camp where they'll say, well, it's never actually been tried. But I'll get to that here in a minute. The three main camps of responses in politics, whether directly to the failure of socialism or not, and you even find a lot of this outside of politics when people are, you know, their life's falling apart, or they make a small mistake in everyday life, or, you know, they're making an excuse for acting a certain way in a situation when they know deep down they shouldn't act that way. The three camps are, one, accepting responsibility. And this camp tends to be in the minority, especially when you're talking about politics, and especially when people are very heated up about a certain issue. Two, you'll have people who will say it's everyone else's fault but theirs. Like, they'll throw out names and groups that they blame. And three, related to this camp, you'll have people who blame inanimate objects and things that are not people and groups. Like, you'll have people who will claim that, going back to our rock analogy, it's not my fault that I have a giant knot on my head. It's the rock's fault for hitting me in the head. It's not my fault that I lifted it up in the air in the first place. Like, they may not even say that. They won't even acknowledge that they did that. They'll just say, oh, it's the rock's fault. That rock came out of nowhere. It just jumped right out at me. The people who will actually, the fourth camp when it comes to communism, I haven't really heard this logic applied to other issues, although that doesn't mean it hasn't been. But what it is essentially they'll say, well, that's not real communism. Communism's never been tried. That's why things that call themselves communists always fail, because it's not real communism, because it's never been tried. Which is just complete hogwash. If it looks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it is a duck. If it calls itself communist and it quotes Marx directly, and it follows the playbook as clear as it is, which Marx's writing is not very clear, then it's communist, sorry. You have tried communism and it keeps blowing up in your face. Sorry. That's why we don't do communism. So, some people never learn. And the reason why some people never learn, whether it's in politics or in matters of daily life or reflecting on their own lives, the reason why some people never learn is that they often blame others or inanimate objects instead of accepting fault. And I know I'm not the first person to point this out, but I still wanted to make this connection here, because it happens a lot in politics on both sides, where people cannot accept fault for things that they have either directly supported or things that they've done when we're talking about politicians. And so they blame everybody else. That's also the same root from which the victim mentality comes from. That you see a lot among the DEI crowd, where they don't want to accept responsibility for their own lack of success or the lack of success of the group that they belong to, which I grant that one person can't accept responsibility for an entire group's failures, just like we shouldn't expect one person alive today to apologize for the actions of people who lived hundreds of years ago. But the point is that a lot of the DEI crowd, they can't accept their own failures. They can't, they don't accept blame for their own decisions. Or they don't accept that the person's at fault when, say, someone gets shot by police. After, you know, acting in a threatening manner towards a police officer and not complying with what he's telling them to do. For example. And so you'll see a lot of the same logic where they'll say, well, it's not his fault, or it's not my fault, or it's not so-and-so's fault that whatever happened, or that whatever's happening right now, whether it's something real or something that they've made up, like food deserts or systemic racism or whatever. They'll say, oh, it's not the neighborhood's fault that, when it comes to food deserts, quote unquote, for example, oh, it's not the neighborhood's fault that the stores have shut down because there's too much crime. The stores can't make a profit because people keep stealing too much from them. Oh, no, it's a food desert. The food just disappeared. Nobody can get the food anymore. And no, that's not how that goes. Sorry. Especially when you consider that the whole idea of a food desert, you only ever hear it applied to cities. You never hear people say that rural areas are food deserts because, I mean, if you live in a rural area, you live miles from a grocery store. You can't walk there. Especially with the way our roads are designed for a car-centric society. So you never hear, I'm not saying we should call rural areas food deserts. We shouldn't. That whole term is dumb. But you only hear it one way. You only hear it, that term used about parts of cities. You never hear it used to describe a rural area where people can't walk to a grocery store because, well, a grocery store is too dang far away. It's like 15 miles or whatever. So that's another thing. That's a little tangent, but yeah, the same logic of not being able to accept fault when fault is appropriate, is very common among leftists, especially on matters related to DEI. But, funny enough, they expect other people, they expect you and I to accept fault for things we didn't do. I mean, I don't know about you, but I've never owned a slave. I mean, I'd be pretty old if I had, 'cause last time I checked, the year's 2025, slavery ended in 1865, and that's even putting aside the fact that the percentage of the population, even back then, who actually owned a slave was like, minuscule. It was, like, I don't remember what it was, but it was stupid small. And, you know, in Indiana, it was illegal, so, like, even if I had lived back then in Indiana, I mean, the chances of that happening are basically zero. Anyway, that doesn't mean that illegal things don't exist, but it does mean that, you know, some things that are illegal are pretty hard to hide. That's all I'm gonna say. I mean, and that's even putting aside the fact that anyone who tests positive for having a brain in the year 2025 knows that slavery is evil, and even a lot of people at the time who lived during it believed it was evil, even among the communities that had it. A lot of people thought it was evil. So there's that. But where I was going with that is that the people on the left, the same people who will come up with a laundry list of excuses for why they are not at fault for the consequences of their own decisions, are also the same people who expect other groups, namely people who are white, to accept blame for things that happened long before they were even born. And things that their specific ancestors probably didn't even engage in. And so that's very lopsided. It's very lopsided logic. And so there's that. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode or considered it to be informative or food for thought. I hope that you'll come back next time and pass this along to anybody you know that might be interested. You can find us on Spotify, Amazon Music, the RSS feed, iHeartRadio, Audible, and Pandora, and Apple Podcasts. You can also contact us on X at JFSCpod and on Facebook at Jesse's Fireside Chats. And if you feel so inclined, you can send us an email at jessesfiresidechats@gmail.com. That's JESSEAS, Fireside Chats, all one word, @gmail.com. Thank you again. And if you'd like to help support us, no pressure. We have a Ko-fi page. It's KOFI.com/Jessesfiresidechats. If you'd like to be a guest on this show, I would love to have a guest. I've been doing this solo for almost a year now. Can't believe it's already been that long. And I would really appreciate a guest every once in a while to kind of spice things up a bit. So if you would like to be a guest, you can email me, you can message me on Facebook or X, whichever is best for you, and we can try to figure that out. I also hope that y'all like the new cover art. ChatGPT drew that because I'm hardly ever in a place that actually has a fireplace that's not also crowded with other people, so it's kind of hard to take the shot myself. So I will give credit where it's due, but it is some awesome cover art. Anyway, thank you so much and have a blessed day.